religion that we have to remember when we're talking about that makes it such a hot topic issue is because we're talking about law. Who gets to be God? Who gets to be God's deputies? Who is the Most High? Who is the divine authority? It's all about the claim to the Most High. The only way that somebody can be higher than us is if we give away our power. Because there's nobody. We're all equal. But we're not equal in our knowledge. So ultimately, I think it does have to be a hierarchy, but it has to be a cooperative hierarchy, like a bee colony. It's about what our value system is, what we care about.
Hello, Universal Hive Mind. Today is May 4th, 2024. I'm your host, Nate Kapp, and welcome to the 68th Cubbyhole Podcast, where critical topics are unveiled, discussed, and tested. The website for today's show is cubbyhole.com. That's CubbyHole.com. And if you prefer to listen to the show on a different platform, you can also listen with Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon, TuneIn Radio, Pandora, Simplecast, YouTube, Odyssey, Minds, BitChute, and much more. If this is your first time listening to the show, welcome to the Cubbyhole. But I definitely recommend going back to show number one. Start there, work your way forward in order, so that way you'll have a better understanding of what is being conveyed in this podcast, okay? And if you're a full-time studier of this show, I just want to say welcome back and thank you for taking the time to go through this information. I hope it's been valuable. I hope it's served you well, and I hope it continues to serve you well. So just wanted to say that. And also, there are going to be slides for today's show. So please make sure to go to cubbyhole.com. Go to the top where it says Podcast 51 Plus, and that's eventually going to be Podcast 51-100. Just want to say that for the future. Click on that, go all the way down to Show 68, and there you will find the slides for today's show. Okay, it's really important to follow along with the slides. Put it up on your screen, whether that be your monitor or your tablet or your phone, your TV, and that way, while I'm going through the information, there can be a better connection with what's being conveyed on this podcast, okay? It's really, really important that we do this. And also, these slides, I know I've said this before, but I just want to remind people, these slides are for the public, okay? So that means you can do whatever you want with these slides. You can put it in your podcast. You can put it into your presentations. You can put it in your art. You can share them however you want to share them. Okay. You can even take the part that says cubbyhole.com at the bottom. You can remove that if you want. If it's something that bothers you or you just don't want it on there, it's okay. Okay. These slides are put out for free. Okay. I work really hard on these slides so that way the information can be conveyed in a better, more simplified way, okay? And I want to see people reuse these images if it helps them, okay? If you want to share it with someone to help them understand things that are going on, or you just there's something that really caught your eye that you're inspired by, and you want to, you know, show other people and you want to explain it. You know, that's one of the reasons I put cubbyhole.com on each slide, is so that way if you don't know the full understanding or at least some part of the understanding of the slide, you can go to cubbyhole.com and find the information, the reference that is tied to that slide. Okay, that's the only reason that I put that on there, okay? So if you do want to save the slide, all you got to do is right-click on the image, go all the way down, or when the window pops open, go down where it gives you the option to save the image to your photos. It's very, very simple. Okay. So on that note, hope you're doing well. I'm feeling pretty good today, and I'm ready to share some really great arcane, ancient, esoteric knowledge. And what I'm going to start off with today is I'm going to continue on the four primal fears. I'm going to go a lot more in depth because I think it's way too important to not really hit a lot more of the important points of these four primal fears, especially because it's dealing with the lower half of the zodiac, which is what I'm going to really dive deeply into, pun intended. Okay, and it's dealing with Osiris, it's dealing with Typhon, aka Set, it's dealing with Nephthys, which is the sister and wife to Typhon, which is also the twin sister to Isis. And I'm also going to talk about Anubis, which is the offspring of Osiris and Nephthys. And I'm really going to, you know, just begin to open up the deeper sciences of the eschatology, aka the final things, okay? And just a side note, if you haven't got a chance to read at least something very simple of the exoteric, mythical, or eschatological knowledge regarding Osiris, the Osiris cycle, I think that that would do you so much more justice with your studies when listening to these esoteric breakdowns that you're hearing on this show. Okay, it'll help you have a better understanding of the story, because that's something that I didn't really cover and I'm not going to cover. That is really up to you. I'm just trying to help lay out the esoteric breakdown because it's something that you don't really hear that much. And again, if you really want to understand the exoteric stories, Wallace Budge is definitely a great source for this, or Plutarch. Okay, if you want to go a little bit deeper into the esoteric and exoteric, you can go to Gerald Massey. If you want to go further than that, go into Manly P. Hall. If you want to go even further than that, go into Albert Churchward. Okay, so there are degrees of depths that you can go into with different researchers. And obviously there's so many others, like Mustafa Gadala, somebody who I think is very important to this whole mystery. Okay. So it is really important that we have these great references while we're going through this information. Now, before I break down the last episode and get us all caught up, I would like to announce here that I have a really, really big presentation in the works called Earth Brain 3. And I haven't come up with the subtitle yet, but it's going to be a huge presentation, a big follow-up presentation to Earth Brain 1 and 2, obviously, that I'm going to give in November this year, 2024. Okay, so it is a very, very big, big presentation. It's going to be my biggest presentation that I've ever given. And I'm probably just going to do it right from home. And because I haven't found a venue, and I think it's going to be a really, really powerful presentation. I know it's going to be a very powerful presentation. So definitely be on the lookout for that, and I will eventually let you guys know about the subtitle and also the specific date in November, because I have not come up with that either. So that being said, I'm not going to spend too much time catching us up on show number 67, but I just want to go through the topics real quick. And the major topic that I've been covering a lot is this symbol of the X and everything that's associated with it, because this symbol is dealing with Osiris, okay? It's dealing with the number 5. And the thing that I talked about on the last episode that was so powerful, and I really hope that people caught what I was trying to convey, which is that the X within the sacred square is the fifth point. Okay, so you have the square of the 4 points, and then in order to have a fifth point in the middle, you have to have an X, and that is spirit. Okay, that is the fifth element. Okay, so spirit is within all things, and the square represents Isis, and the X represents Osiris, and together they are the X and the square. Okay, there's a reason that Isis is the fourth child of Nut or Nut. Okay, so she is the square. She is the holy square. She is the sacred square. And so she is the one who contains the spirit, and Osiris is the spirit that holds the square together. So they work with each other, okay? And this is all about understanding the deeper aspects of the sacred feminine and sacred masculine. And I know it can be a little disorienting, but when you really think about it and how you come to understand the explanation of it, it can really unfold and you can really start to see the beauty of these two symbols. And this is really the square with the X in the middle. This is the symbol of animism, because the square itself is matter and the X is spirit. So there is spirit in all things, all matter. Okay. So that being said, that is one of the most profound things that I have ever come to understand in this information. And I think that if we can really understand that at a very deep level, everything else starts to unfold. Everything else starts to make sense. And this is a science that goes further back than the solar mythos, but this is dealing with the solar mythos, which is the solar mythos is about sun worship, but it's also the science of the sun cycles, which helps us understand our spiritual journey, okay? If we understand the sciences, which most people of today do not, they have made the mistake, a great error, to literalize this type of information, which is why we're in the big mess that we're in this big material mess, this world or this land of materialism, okay? So this is all dealing with the Master Mason degree as well, okay? Because the Master Mason degree is all about the eschatology, which is dealing with final things. This is all about raising the spirit, okay? This is about coming up out of the coffin, okay? And so within the zodiac is a tracing board, okay? And the Master Mason degree, or the raised degree tracing board, is what can help us understand this beautiful knowledge stored within the tracing board of the zodiac. And yes, the zodiac is a tracing board, because it's all about tracing our soul in this one beautiful round image of multiple images, okay? So this is dealing with time cycles. And time cycles are so important to understand, because it's what helps us recognize the evolution of the mythos. The stellar mythos, the lunar mythos, and the solar mythos, really, it just helps us understand our history. And I'm going to go a lot further into this as we go through these next few shows, okay? And we got into the epigominal days, and that's all dealing with the X symbol because it's dealing with the five. And the five epigominal days is the 5 days out of time, the five timeless days. And that is one of the most important things that you could come to understand, because the five, think about this. The five is always associated with spirit because there's five elements. There's earth, water, air, and fire, and then the quintessence. Quin meaning five, the essence of the five, quintessence, the spirit. Because spirit is timeless. Spirit is here and now. It's always been here. It will always be here. Because it is the one great spirit, which is something that's been talked about for hundreds of thousands of years. Okay? So when you understand that fifth element, then you can start to understand this one a lot better, because it's all about working your way back. Working your way back is all about working your way back into nature, because we've been dismembered from nature, and now we're trying to remember ourselves back into nature, okay? So the five epigominal days is just so important, and if it's something you're having trouble with, I really felt like I did a very good job of explaining it on the last episode, and also the past five episodes. So I definitely recommend going back and re-listening and really studying and ruminating on what I'm talking about. And also in that show, I talked about Amenta, which is the sacred land, aka the Middle Earth. And Amenta is very important to the lower half of the zodiac, because especially in the orientation of the zodiac that I'm sharing it in on this show, okay? Because it's all about understanding when the sun goes below, it goes in the west below the equator in the autumn equinox, all the way down through the winter solstice and on up to the spring equinox, okay, in the east. So that is a very important sacred knowledge that we really must understand, because, you know, and when I say Middle Earth, you know, Middle Earth has nothing to do with anything of the actual physical world. Okay. Middle Earth is just about understanding the heart at the center. Okay. Amenta, think about this too. Amenta is the underworld. And anytime that you ever, you know, watch movies or read certain stories where you hear this term underground, you know, underground has a lot to do with being rebellious against the government. Underground has a lot to do with being against the mainstream. And the mainstream right now in the world is materialism. So materialism is on top, the upper half. It represents the upper half of the zodiac before the sun goes down, okay? Before the sun as the spirit, you know, symbolically as the spirit raises into the spring equinox and then up into the summer. Before all that, it's in the beginning of the myth. It's in the beginning of the eschatology, because it's all about understanding the beginning of our life in materialism. Okay, this is the top half. This is the mainstream. This is the place that people are living in light. And this is material light. It's not spiritual light yet. Okay, so that's what it symbolically represents in the zodiac. Okay, so the point is that Amenta is this sacred land, aka underground, okay? Because the underground is all about going under the earth symbolically, or into Middle Earth symbolically, okay? Because it's all about going internal into the land below in order to understand yourself from the deepest depths of your soul. Okay, and I'm going to really go into that as we move forward. So the other important topics that I covered was the tomb, the womb, death, Osiris, Hiram Abiff, which obviously Hiram Abiff and Osiris is all about understanding Freemasonry in the modern day that connects, you know, the ancient Freemasonry of the ancient Egyptian world dealing with Osiris and beyond, okay? And also, this is all dealing with the ancient Egyptian mythos of stellar, solar, and lunar hero cults, which is all about understanding totemic sociology. And this is dealing with the inner journey of the soul. It's dealing with spirit. It's dealing with the mind. It's dealing with the body. It's dealing with the brain. And it is all helping us understand the science of the eschatology, which I'm going to really go so much deeper into at the end of this show, if we have time, and then into the next show, okay? And then hopefully we cover everything that we need to cover, and we can really start to egress out of the eschatology. But I'm going to cover the eschatology as much as I need to really make the point of how important this information is. And this is all about metamorphosis. This is all about metamorphosizing, you know, going through the process, going through this journey into your newer self, or your new self, or your renewed self. And the Netcher gods are very important to this whole process when dealing with the ancient mythos, dealing with Typhon, aka Set, and also Isis, and Nut, and Nephthys, and Anubis. And I know I mentioned that earlier, but this is from the last show. And also, again, animism. This is what's going to really help us understand natural law at a very deep level, okay? Because it's all about understanding our connection to the law. And the more we understand our connection to this law, the more that we can really have a very deep bond and appreciation for this law that we either go against or we serve, you know, to align to. And also, I got into compartmentalization, which is something that goes hand in hand with this whole idea of Typhon dismembering his brother Osiris into 14 pieces, or just in pieces in general, okay? Because it's all about the compartmentalization of light, which is akin to truth, okay? And this compartmentalization is all about the R-complex control system that preys on people's primal fears, okay? So that's what we're going to talk about first, okay? We're going to go really far into the primal fears. So if you will please go to the first slide that says Primal Fears with Darkness, Predators, Abandonment, and Chaos. And these are the major embedded primal fears that we're all coded with. We're all coded internally with these four primal fears, especially. Okay. And these fears are what push us in life because they're all tied to the R complex. The R complex is the part of the brain that keeps the sentient beings in survival mode. That's what it does. That's why all sentient beings have this ability to survive or try to survive. So it's all about being sentient, being able to feel, perceive, and survive. Because being sentient beings are survivalists. Okay? So this is the oldest part of the brain that most sentient beings are run by. Okay? And this part of the brain is simply a beautiful gift of life and the experience that comes with it. Okay? It's a gift from the Creator that pushes us to live as much as we can or we're able to. So all these primal fears, all these primary fears are directly linked to the R-complex part of the brain, the lower brain stem, the lowest part of the triune brain, the three-in-one brain. Okay, so you have your R-complex at the bottom of your brain in the three-in-one brain model. You have your limbic system in the middle and then your neocortex at the top, the two hemispheres together. Okay, so these primal fears are our pushers. They're our motivators. They're a type of, you can even look at them as a type of love frequency, because all is love. And so love is the expanding force. Love is what pushes us. Love is the frequency that aligns with the gift of life itself. And it's something that we can actually tap into consciously. And the reason I'm sharing this information in this section of the knowledge of the zodiac, in particular with Osiris, is because it deals with the sun. The sun is the light giver. The sun is light. Okay? Obviously, we don't know what the sun is really made of, but we know that it gives light, which is also warmth. And it's also the lifter of life. So when you think of the earth during the night, all life goes down closer to earth. All life on earth goes closer to earth, going to sleep, right? Going dormant. And then when the sun comes up, everything starts to lift up towards the sun. The flowers rise up and they open up like satellite dishes. We rise up out of bed. Dogs rise up and start barking. So life gets up and starts to move around more in the sun. So the sun plays a major part in this science of primal fears. And it's really important that we understand this, because most people are just enthralled to their primal fears, because they're completely enthralled to their ignorance. They're enthralled to their apathy and their laziness and their cowardice. This is what equates to darkness, especially of the mind. Okay, now, darkness, we have to understand darkness in a positive aspect and a negative aspect. And the same with light. Okay. So darkness is where most people dwell mentally, even though they're afraid of the dark. And this is a very interesting paradox when you really understand the psychology behind it. But the reason people are so afraid of the dark is because, I would say, it's pretty obvious that in the physical material world, it's because Well, you can't see in the dark. Things are not defined in the dark. There's no light to help define things with shadows in order to see the depth of things. So you can't really see well in the dark, or you can't see at all if it's pitch black. Okay? And it's typically, it's tied to being cold, because when the sun goes down, it gets cold, right? Especially in the winter time when the sun is barely coming up, it gets cold. So darkness is associated with cold. And it's also associated with being lonely, especially if it's, again, winter time, because not just in winter time, I mean, even if you go out at night, there's very few people out at night. And therefore, there's more isolation at night. But if it's in the winter time, it's not just dark outside, but it's also cold, which really isolates people. So it's tied into this idea of being lonely. And then on top of that, it's also scary, because warmth brings us more to life. And therefore, being alone and cold in the dark, it's a scarier feeling, because you don't know what to expect. That's why it's unpredictable. It's more associated with unpredictability, because you don't really know what to expect when it's dark, because you can't see things. You can't really tell what's going on in the dark as much as you can in the light. And, you know, obviously when it's summertime, you know it's going to be, more than likely it's going to be warm. You know you can be outside more. You know you can be around people more. You know that things are going to feel much better and be much better. But when it's cold and dark, there's more of an unpredictable feeling. And people generally don't like things that are unpredictable. But this is all tied in with this primal fear of darkness. Now, the etymology of darkness is very interesting, because it means deep. So think about darkness and deep. Think about the deep, dark ocean. If you've ever been in a deep, dark ocean, or you've just seen it on, you know, a TV or something, or a documentary, it is very huge, like overwhelmingly huge. Just like going to the Grand Canyon is overwhelming to the senses. Well, it's really, really overwhelming to the senses going into a deep ocean, because when you go into a deep, dark ocean where you can't see land anywhere, and when you're looking down, it just, the further down you look, the darker it gets, and you don't know what's down there. So this is also tied in with predators. Okay, this is where the primal fear of predators comes into play as well. And it is unpredictable. It's a scary feeling. It's very overwhelming. You know, when you're looking, when you're going down underwater and you're looking around, even though it's so beautiful, it seems never ending. It's enormous. It's vast. It is unsteady. It's, think about this, it's unstudied. And if you correspond the fact that, you know, this is something we hear so much, is that we live on Earth and we're trying to go to space and we're trying to colonize and send all these satellites all over the solar system, and yet we haven't even begun to really dive deeply into our own ocean and understand that. And to me, that is an allegory. It's a corresponding allegory to the majority of the world, in the sense that everybody is trying to go outward into the material and not going inward into the depths of their soul, into the darkness. And darkness is like a void. And a void is, it's emptiness. So darkness seems empty, but it's about emptiness of light, whether that be in the material or the mind. So we inherently possess this primal fear of darkness because it's void of the light, or void of the sun, the light of the sun. So when the sun goes down, darkness follows, which makes us raise a type of external survival mechanism to be prepared for things like predators or objects that we can't see, because it's just not being defined as much, which is why we use things like a lantern of some type, whether that be a flashlight or a phone or a fire. So the primal fear prepares us for anything that the darkness brings into our experience, and that's part of our instincts. It's our way of dealing with the partial absence of the sun, which is the light. This is why darkness is tied into our sleep. Because when we're in sleep, we don't need light. We're completely inward. And this phase of our day, this is a type of mental, physical, and spiritual phase to recharge for the day sky, for the next day, right? So darkness is dealing with the night sky. It is the end of the day that ties together the next day. And mentally, darkness means absence of information. And that can mean ignorance, which means, you know, refusing reachable knowledge, or it can mean nescience of information, which means to not know something because the knowledge is not reachable. So spiritually, darkness means being bereft of spirit, but also it means going through darkness to achieve gnosis, in order to egress out of darkness, to have experience and a knowing and have an understanding, in order to come out of darkness, to rise up out of darkness. And most people in this world are spiritually bereft, which means most people are asleep in the deep. Most people are asleep in the dark, not knowing they're in the dark, but fearing the dark, while they're actually worshiping the material light, which is the upper half of the zodiac. Most people are worshipers of material light. That is materialism. So this is what it truly means to be firmly and unconsciously installed into the simulated man-made matrix system. It's a mental program that's running on the primal fear of darkness. So deep down, we all fear darkness as a result of the absence of the sun. That's where it begins. But we don't have to be victims to it. We don't have to be victims to these primal fears. We don't need to stay ignorant to the real power of being conscious of these primal fears. Okay. And that real power that I'm talking about, it is absolutely being harnessed by the dark occult, who use this power to rule the minds of those who remain mentally in the dark about this information, to rule the material-minded people. That's what they're doing. And this is symbolically the black cube. The black cube represents human darkness, aka ignorance and dogma, which is why people fear the black cube, not realizing that it's the spiritual light that they need in order to develop into true adulthood, in order to evolve themselves, to evolve the human species, because that's what it's about. It's about stripping down our dogmatic material worship, the material light worship, and discovering spirit, which reconnects us with nature, the divine mother principle, the sacred feminine. See, most people fear the black cube. They fear Saturn symbolism. They fear things like Satanism, and they fear darkness, really not understanding that it's because of their very resisting efforts and overall ignorance to these dark things that they're actually perpetuating the evil that generates from these things as a result. And through their ignorance of these things, they themselves become these things. People become their dark versions of themselves blindly. They don't know. They're not conscious of what they're actually doing. So staying ignorant of these things doesn't make them automatically disappear, or it doesn't automatically make evil people not use these things just by ignoring them or avoiding them. That's not how it works. And that's part of this whole New Age schism. You know, just look into the positive of things. Don't look into the negative. Just ignore that. You know, we don't need to look into those things, because all we got to do is just be positive, think positive, don't look into anything negative, and therefore we'll attract more positive into our life, and we'll never have to worry about the negative. And that is part of this phenomenon of solipsism, which is when someone believes that their mind is the only mind that exists in the whole universe, or that the whole universe is their mind only. Okay. Not only is that egotism, but it's solipsism, and it's part of this New Age ism, schism. Okay. So it is a very, very dangerous place to be, because life is all about balance. And if we don't have balance in the way that we think about things, negative and positive, really looking at things from two perspectives, or all perspectives, then we really can go into an imbalance, and therefore we can cause an imbalance collectively into the collective consciousness of the world. And that's why we have so many issues in this world, because people get stuck in one thing, and they have faith in it, they believe in it, and therefore that thing grows, it cultivates, and it turns into things that become very nasty in this world. They become very dangerous in this world because they don't have a full range perspective. They don't have a full range understanding or a full range education in that way. So it's very dangerous to have a belief system, in something that is very imbalanced. Now, let's go to the second primal fear, which is dealing with predators. And predators are animals that prey upon others. And even though humans are inherently fearful of many scary wild animals like lions and tigers and bears and sharks, this goes for the fear of humans that prey on humans and act like wild animals in this way. But the thing is that humans are more sophisticated because they have intelligence working with the R complex. And so you have this R complex ruling class of humans in this world who have a knowledge differential. They understand the mind and they use certain methods all the time that work very well, as anybody who's really paying attention can see. And they instill, they inject fear into the minds of the people that they control or that they prey upon. Okay? And this word predator is very interesting to look into the etymology of, because it translates to rob, which means violate the rights of when it comes to human beings. Because when it comes to human beings, to rob someone is to steal from them, which is theft. And this is a transgression of natural law. And that means that, you know, humans are really the only violators in nature, since human beings are the only species that has the capacity to delineate the difference between right and wrong behaviors. But the predators of this world, the human predators, are the ones that instill the fear into their prey through media and through school and any type of institutions or any type of religious institutions. They prey upon the weak and the vulnerable and the ignorant. And this is why most people hold the belief of social Darwinism. And they're not even aware of this belief. Most people do not understand what social Darwinism actually means, but it's the belief of survival of the most ruthless, or survival of the fittest, who gets to rule over everyone else. Whoever fights their way up to the top of the, you know, the mountain or the pyramid, they get to rule over everybody else. And they have no idea how that pyramid system of power actually works. They don't question that. And social Darwinism is, it's a religion. It's a low dog eat dog religion. It's a low dog eat dog vibration belief system. It's a root fear at the base of consciousness. And the way to evolve out of the dominance of this fear is to not only learn the science of natural law, but to also study the predators, study their minds by studying books that these people have written. Study their methods. They put it out for people to see. There's so many books out there that you can read all about mind control methods, which means that you study the effects of those methods, and therefore you can start to see how they actually pull these control methods off. Study their behaviors. Look into what they're into. Look into how they speak. Look into, you know, their thought patterns. Look into, you know, what they spend money on. Look into what their intent of the world is. So study their playbooks. Study the things that they use to control the mind, which means it's a good idea to always look into anything that's dealing with the mind or the brain or behavior of humans, especially. And this goes for all predators. That goes for animal predators, and that goes for human predators. And I really think that human predators is what we really need to understand, because it's about understanding ourselves at our darkest, ignorant recesses of our soul. Okay? Because every human being has the potential to be their best version, or the potential to be their worst version, which means we all have these potentials. And therefore, we should learn, become conscious of those parts of ourselves. So that way we can really start to understand what's going on in this world. Therefore, we can become conscious, and therefore we can become more free and more sovereign. We have to remember that we fear what we don't know and what we don't understand, which means if someone studies the attributes of a predator, like, let's say, a bear, it doesn't mean that that fear automatically goes away of that bear, but it does mean there is now some type of preparedness to deal with that bear if you ever need to. So, for example, if you go into the woods and know about different types of bears, like black bears or brown bears, grizzly bears, and let's say you encounter a black bear, and if you've studied them, then you'll be more equipped to survive that encounter if that ever happens. And if you're equipped with weapons like bear spray or a firearm, because you know that where you're going, there is the possibility that you might run into a bear, well, wouldn't you assume that's probably going to be a very smart idea? And so why wouldn't you apply that to the world of humans that you live in? You know, a lot of people don't think about that, but, and that's, you know, that's another form of mind control. But if you know how to stand your ground when there's a black bear, and you know how to charge at the black bear, and you know how to loudly shout at that bear to back off, then you probably are going to live another day as a result. But that's not guaranteed. It's never guaranteed. And that can depend on your personal attributes as well. But the point is to be equipped with knowledge, gnosis, you know, having an understanding. And in this case, be armed just in case you know you're going to be in a place where there are bears. And that way you're more than likely going to consciously survive and live longer as a result. So it's about understanding the predators to such a degree. Obviously, you don't have to go study every single attribute about the predator, but it's all about gaining as much information as you need so that way you don't ignorantly fear them, because that can lead to more suffering. That can lead to even death. And again, the fear will always be there. having knowledge of predators is what generates an awareness and a type of courage that doesn't allow predators to just prey on you with ease. Or in this case of psychopathic humans, to just do whatever they want with your mind and manipulate you with ease. You don't want that. You want to make it very difficult for anyone to manipulate your mind because you have spiritual armor, because you have educated yourself with the knowledge of the predators. You have studied their playbooks. And there are many people who have not only put out their own playbooks, but also there are whistleblowers who have put out very important information that reveals the playbooks of the psychopaths of this world. And we should look at that as much as we can. And natural law really is the crux of where what we must put into our minds and put into our hearts and align to really be able to shield ourselves from all predators the best we can, and to, you know, understand our own internal potential predator. Because if we know the difference between right and wrong, we can choose to do right over wrongdoing. And that's all about harmonizing in nature. So having that knowledge first is a good foundation, and then work your way into studying these predators. So that way, because see, the thing is, most predators who are in the higher echelons of this control structure in this world of human beings, they understand natural law to a certain degree, and they understand how to manipulate it to their advantage, especially by having order followers carry out their orders, carry out their agendas through violence, so that way they don't get their hands dirty. Okay? So this is very, very important when it comes to the Zodiac. And I will explain further the southwestern area of darkness on the zodiacal tracing board when it comes to predators, because it has a lot to do with darkness. It has a lot to do with the ones who harness the knowledge and the energy that dwells in that part of the zodiac, or that part of the season or year. And they use this energy, they use the knowledge associated with this area of the zodiac against the masses who are void of this knowledge. So becoming conscious of this information is what's going to help us transform and become aware of the dark, therefore become enlightened. To find the light in the dark, to find the light in the heart of darkness. See? So, that being said, let's move to the third primal fear, which is abandonment. And abandonment is a huge trauma that we possess because it deals with the sun taking its trek, going down in the southern hemisphere, dipping down below the equator during the beginning of the fall, the autumn, below the autumn equinox, which then causes darker days. It goes down into the Tropic of Capricorn. So this is when the northern hemisphere starts to have colder days and less light and less livelier days, right? So they're harsher days, and, you know, especially for food or growing food in general. And Obviously, if you live in the southern hemisphere, this is taking place when the sun is going up in the northern hemisphere towards the Tropic of Cancer. So this is at the beginning of your fall season. So I'm just saying that to make sure that we're oriented, because I know there are people that listen to this in the southern hemisphere. There are people that listen to this in the northern hemisphere and at the equator. But also, something that I feel like I have to say right now is always remember that the southern hemisphere is associated with the sacred feminine and the northern hemisphere is associated with the sacred masculine. Okay? That is very important to understand, to make sure that we stay oriented. Okay, and I'm going to go a lot further into that as I move forward, but I just want to say that now to make sure that people have this orientation, this imagery in their mind, so that way when we're going through this information, everything else starts to make sense, okay? So every year, there is a seeming abandonment by the sun, which deeply affects all of us, especially those of us further up or down the hemispheres, especially those of us who are above the Tropic of Cancer or below the Tropic of Capricorn. And because people don't understand this deep solar abandonment, then they become easily manipulated. Okay, and I'm going to explain how and why. So the dark solar priests of this world, the dark occult, those who understand this abandonment phenomenon, they use this information. They have a gnosis of this information, and they use it as a manipulation strategy by selling people on things like a literal solar messiah and selling people on things that go with the solar messiah, like, you know, the doctrines that surround this savior, this solar messiah. Or they simply covertly push people through media mind control and other forms of indoctrination to make them depend on Big Daddy government and the state. And by getting people to buy into these things, they now have something to depend on that seemingly won't abandon them. So these people that they're manipulating, their sun worship church that they go to and their socialism government system that they support and that they believe in, these are their proxy saviors as proxies for the sun. So really think about that. Really ruminate on what I'm saying. Because it's all about understanding. Let me just say this again. Their sun worship church, okay? And I'm talking about all Abraham religions, okay? They have their solar worship church or temple or synagogue that they go to. And they also simultaneously have their socialism government system set up with the institutionalized church that they attend. They support and believe in both of these systems. And the reason is because both of these systems are proxies for their saviors. And when it comes to, see, because you have to understand the layers So the Son is their savior to begin with, deep down, okay? Something that has seemingly abandoned them. See, what we have to understand is that people, especially who have taken to the Abrahamic doctrines, so these people believe in Jesus in some way or another, okay? And Jesus is a proxy for the Son, and the Son is a proxy for Spirit, and I'm going to get further into that. So the Son is a proxy for Spirit. Jesus is a proxy for the Son. Jesus is part of the church. Jesus is part of the Abrahamic religion. And because Jesus is associated with the Son, when the Son abandons people, people feel that deep down. All of us feel it. But those who are tied to the solar Messiah or the solar Savior or whoever it is, they are tied to that, and government comes in as a proxy system for that, a full-time proxy savior, quote-unquote savior, okay? Quote-unquote bringing order to societies. So people depend on government as a savior who is for a proxy for the Savior being the solar Messiah, who is a proxy for the Son, who does not understand that the Son is a proxy for Spirit, because people have literalized the solar doctrines and live in a material world. Okay, so I really hope that makes sense. And understanding those levels of the Savior that has been sold to people's minds, that's what's really going to help us understand. It's all based in solar worship. And therefore, when the Son leaves, then that is when people feel abandoned. So things like the church or government seem to not abandon people that are tied to these things deep down. So it's deeply layered psychology and definitely fear-based abandonment mind control. And of course, this is what perpetuates into the family dynamic as well, because many children are abandoned by their parents, which then allows for the church and the state, aka the government, to come in, to intervene, and be the saviors of those children through many different types of institutions. But the children, they end up perpetually having major abandonment issues because they're already abandoned early on by their parents, which is already really horrible in and of itself, but then they're unconsciously dealing with solar abandonment issues. And this primal fear especially makes young people vulnerable to manipulators who prey on this fear, who understand this fear. So abandonment really runs very deep, and becoming aware of the solar cycles, this is what can help us deal with our dependency on man's law, especially becoming aware of things like natural law and understanding it and aligning to it, and then hopefully teaching it to other people. So this is what dissolves man's law. This is what dissolves the divide within us. And I really believe that we even have a deeper abandonment issue with the Son because of the past ice ages. Think about that. So when the sun cycles around its own pole around every 26,000 years or so, this is what causes it to be at its furthest point away from the Earth. And this is what causes the ice age. And from ice age to ice age is actually called the one great year cycle. This is something that is recorded into the little bear. This is what's recorded into the circumpolar constellations around the North Pole star, Polaris. So I think knowing this and studying this can really help us deal with the natural phenomenon of abandonment a lot further, okay? Because abandonment is something that really runs very deep within the human being. And I would say it definitely runs very deep into the animal kingdom as well. Now, the fourth primal fear is chaos. And chaos is in opposition to the R complex, in a sense, especially when it's captured by the dark mind controllers of our world who understand chaos. They understand the mind. And so if they have your mind as soon as you come out of the womb, well, then they can keep chaos in opposition to the R complex, because the R complex wants comfort. But due to government, aka mind control, aka R complex dominators who have the knowledge differential, they've convinced the masses that they represent quote-unquote order. And they also make people believe that they are the ones that maintain some kind of peace. And they make people believe that there would be actual chaos without government, without them. So there's this desire for security and authority by the people, by the normies, because ego wants comfort, and it doesn't mind having someone else in charge as long as there's limited chaos and there's some type of order and some type of safety. There's some type of security measures that are put in place, because it's all about this savior syndrome. People want a savior. People believe in government as their savior because government has stepped in as a proxy for their savior, aka Jesus, aka the church, aka the Son. Because government is full time. Government will not abandon its people. I know some people wish it would. And that's another problem, is people think that government's just going to go away someday. And it's like, no, government doesn't go away until you become enlightened, until you become aware and have an understanding of natural law, and that you're teaching natural law. And you're not just teaching it, you're aligned to it. That's what dissolves government. Okay? So this man-made system, this is a perfect system for getting people to believe that they can somehow magically hand over their rights and not be responsible for their beliefs and their actions, which this is a complete illusion in materialism, and it can never be true. You cannot get rid of your rights, and you cannot delegate your rights. You can't give your rights away. You cannot receive rights. You are born with rights. All of us are born with the same exact rights in nature. But the chaos that most people really truly fear in this world is the chaos of anarchy, which means without government. It means without rulers. And when I say without government, obviously I mean external government. I don't mean internal government. Okay? And yes, anarchy can be chaotic. It can lead to chaos, and it probably will if government ever somehow diminishes, because people are uneducated of principles. They're uneducated of rights. They don't know the difference between right and wrong. Most people do not understand this. Most people are moral relativists. But that doesn't make anarchy illegitimate or wrong if it does end up being chaotic. Okay? Even if there is chaos during anarchy, during an anarchy society, that society is still in better moral shape than being governed by socialist psychopaths and socialist institutions and the military industrial complex. It's in way better shape than that, but obviously I just don't see that happening unless people start to become aware of natural law. It's not, governments are just not going to fall, okay? The only way that we can actually rise up is to become enlightened. It's to raise our spirit. It's to become conscious of this type of information. This is what's going to really cause harmony and less chaos. Because the more that we become moral, the more that our society becomes free. And people will start to work with each other instead of against each other. And of course, the opposite of that is the more that we stay ignorant, the more chaos there will be and probably more immoral behavior. And therefore, we will be less free as a result. So we really won't live in a true anarchist society, because anarchy cannot be a true anarchy society without natural law. It's just impossible. It just wouldn't work. And that being said, you know, government or socialism really is inevitable until our human species acts in accord with natural law, with the law of the universe, the real law. And the point is, government truly is the embodiment of chaos, because its only means to any end is through violence. It's a control system. That's ego. That's darkness in the ignorance sense. So that's chaos. And because we have the fear of chaos and don't understand principles and don't understand rights as a collective species, then we easily hand over our rights to these predators, all due to our own darkness, being our ignorance, being our cowardice, being our apathy. And this all starts on the individual level. And again, natural law is the true order, which is why we must learn this law. We must learn the sciences of this law. We must understand these sciences, and we must teach these sciences of this law. And so that way we can have real freedom in our societies, in our world. We have to understand that the chance of chaos is inevitable, no matter if the society is run by government or in some state of anarchy. But we have to remember, government by its very nature is chaos, which is based in immoral behavior. It's based in dogmatic beliefs. It is violence. Okay, it is violence through control. Anarchy has nothing to do with that. Okay? And eventually on here in the cubbyhole, we're going to go much further into anarchy and volunteerism and abolitionism, socialism, everything else that we need to understand about our human condition. Okay? So there's a lot to cover in this podcast. So, as I've stated, these primal fears are all based in our survival instinct to simply not die. That's really it. So, overall, it's all about fearing death and avoiding physical death the best that we can. And that's part of our being. That's part of our gift from the Creator that pushes us to live in this beautiful material world. And again, I think I've said this quite a few times, but when I am talking about people living in materialism and demonizing that, I want you to understand I'm not demonizing material itself. Okay? I just feel like I have to reiterate that so people don't think I'm somehow against material. I'm not. I understand that spirit and material are really one and the same, but it's about becoming conscious of both in order to understand them together. Okay? So yeah, we're born in materialism. That's not evil, but to stay in it and to act and to cultivate a material world with no spirit, that's what keeps us in a childlike mentality, and therefore we just live in the R complex. We are living in a simulation in that way because we're just living in survival, and that has nothing to do with free will, really, when you really understand what free will is and also what determinism is, okay? Something that we've covered in this show quite a ways back. Now, since we're talking about death, I do want to talk about death briefly before we go any further, because death is something that most people think about quite a bit, and it's a very concerning factor to most people because it's something that can't really be known what happens after death, or, you know, going through that transition. You know, it's a very scary thought. And it's a very concerning factor because it's something that can't be known and most certainly can't be understood in the physical realm. And yet we know that it's coming at some point, right? So we have a certain curiosity of that time right before we die and then what happens afterwards, because we really don't know what that feels like. We haven't gone through that yet, okay? And most people never learn about death, not from a physical standpoint and especially not from a spiritual standpoint, because at least physical death is something that we can actually see with the literal five senses when we see actual dead people or dead animals. But when it comes to the spiritual understanding of death, this is harder to understand because it's dealing with the occult. It's dealing with something abstract. It's dealing with something that is hidden from sight. It's hidden from sight and the other four senses, okay? It's dealing with the hidden forces in nature that require knowledge. So it requires a knowing. It requires an understanding of nature's unseen forces, aka natural laws. So when we become conscious of these forces in nature. So when we become conscious of the occult, this is what's going to help us really understand death from a spiritual standpoint, which helps us understand the physical standpoint. So it requires a deep shadow work in our individual being and realigning to nature. It requires the spiritual currencies of time and attention of the self. Okay, so it requires honesty, and it requires admitting being wrong, which is definitely something most people really have a hard time with. And so studying these primal fears and taking the journey into the archetypal underworld, this is what can really help us deal with this fear of death and the fear of predators and the fear of chaos and the fear of abandonment and darkness. Because becoming conscious of the material blockages, if you want to call it that, this is where we begin the spiritual transitional metamorphosis from the material dominance, the R complex dominance of the self, then on into the internal spiritual levitation, the rising of the spirit, the raising of consciousness, the raising of light, true internal light. So this is the whole second birth process, put simply. Okay? So there's a lot of beautiful science that we have to journey through in order to become conscious of this process. Okay? So now, let's go to the slide, Cycle of Osiris. And this is something that I went over on the last episode, but now I'm going to go through it a lot more. Okay? I'm going to really start to refine the bottom right area of the zodiac. Okay, so I began the symbolic descent into the underworld, aka Amenta, aka Autumn, the dark side. Okay, the land of the dead. This is the land of the tomb, and this is also akin to the womb. It's akin to the mummy or mommy or mammy. Okay? So this is this whole area, this whole bottom half is the sacred feminine womb, which is all dealing with the lower half. And this is all dealing with the zodiacal houses of Libra, Scorpio, Sagittarius, Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces. Okay? And there's so much more that this lower half represents. And there's no way that I could cover everything that is associated with it, but I'm going to not only cover the basics, but I'm going to explain the eschatology and the mythos, the mythology, and I'm going to explain the seasons. I'm going to explain a lot of things that are more simple, but also go a lot further in detail as well. And we just have to understand that the more knowledge that we bring to this tracing board, the more is going to be revealed to us. Okay, just like any tracing board. Any symbol, okay, that's how it works. So I'm just going to go a lot more deeper into this bottom half. I'm going to refine the whole lower right section of the autumn area of this zodiac with the sciences dealing with mythology and eschatology of the solar mythos. And I'm going to maybe begin to get into some of the deeper psychology of the eschatology towards the end, but we'll see. We'll see if we have time, but definitely on the next episode, that's where we're going to go. Okay. So there's a lot to cover, but it's an absolute essential study for anyone who is trying to understand reality. Okay. Whether that be through institutionalized religion, whether that be through the lens of science, whether that be through the lens of agriculture, whether that be through the lens of understanding cycles in general. But really, the more that we can understand all of these things, they all go together to help us understand ourselves spiritually. Okay, so the whole zodiac is symbolically about overstanding, understanding, and inner standing. Okay, so having an overstanding in this archetype, in this tracing board, is all about having the perspective of mind that has gone through everything in the upper. Okay, which really you can't have an overstanding until you go through the underworld to have an understanding. And then once you have an understanding, then you can start to have an overstanding, which really gives you an inner standing. So in order to make the deeper connections to our reality, it's good to begin by attempting to understand, to stand under where we stand, to know our foundation, to make the internal connections based on the structure of the logic of the knowledge. Is it strong? Does it make sense? So going into the symbolic underworld will help us have a better understanding of our darkness and the sacred feminine. You know, think about the phrase, get to the bottom of it. Let's get to the bottom of it. You know, where does that come from? Think about it. To get to the bottom of something implies to get to the truth of the matter, to get to what is true. So it means to discover the real reason for something, or the hidden reason that something exists or happens. So it's about getting down to the nitty-gritty. It's about getting down to the foundation in order to understand the structure of the knowledge, the structure of the understanding, the structure of the connection, to make sure that it has logic, to make sure that it makes sense. That's how we come to an understanding. Because if your structure doesn't make sense, then it's probably just going to collapse. Therefore, it's false. It's a falsehood. It doesn't make sense. It's illogical. You know, and don't just go to the root or the bottom. Also go to the top and go over the foundation once you have observed the foundation. Once you have observed the structure of the foundation, go to the top, which is about overstanding. So overstanding can be looked at as having a good exoteric knowing of the whole structure, right? From the outside. And the inner standing is about having a good esoteric knowing, an esoteric understanding. But it's also about having a good exoteric knowing. So an inner standing is really all about having a good exoteric and esoteric knowing. And even though you could just say understanding, which I do, I never really use the terms innerstanding or overstanding, because to me, understanding really is about understanding the whole picture, where all the pieces fit together, to have the internal connection of how all the pieces fit together correctly, logically. But I think that it is proper to explain understanding, overstanding, and innerstanding with this tracing board, okay? Because I think that can really help people have a better understanding of what it can mean symbolically. Now, before I go any further, there is something that I want to be very clear on, something that I think people really need to keep in their mind forever.
Forever.
And that is to make sure to always look at the dark and the light, both in a positive light and a negative light. Look at both of them in positive and negative. Okay? Look at them both morally and immorally. Understand both light and dark with equal amounts of positive and negative, okay? Because too many people look at dark, they demonize the dark, and then they get trapped in a dialectic. They get trapped in being imbalanced too much in light, okay? And I'm not talking about spiritual light, I'm talking about material light, okay? But it also can happen where people go too far into the dark and dwell there, and they don't have enough light. They don't have enough spiritual light. So it's really important to be balanced in the way that you look at dark and light, okay? So in the last show, I demonstrated the negative side of light in the material sense at the upper half of the zodiac. And again, material itself is not a bad thing. There's nothing immoral about material. But to mentally maintain material as the highest form of self is why we get into so much trouble in this world, because there's so much imbalance in the material behavior. It creates socialism, which religiously puts man as the most high. Okay, this is social Darwinism. This is putting man as the highest being on earth. Okay, so the majority of the human species is collectively bereft of spirituality as a result. It's because this mindset, if it's stagnated, and, you know, to stay in this frequency is to live blind in what's known as the land of the living, controlled by the R complex, which is eschatologically understood as Osiris, the god of the living, the dominant R complex ruling the brain, the gift of the creator that keeps us alive. It's meant to be developed. It's meant to be the training wheels for people until they have developed their brain and raised themselves to adulthood, to responsibility. Most people think that they're adults who think that voting is a right, or think that taking away someone else's rights to make their lives safer is a right. These people who think that we need a president in order to live in a free world, these are not adults. These are children who are living in the R complex. But of course, their physical being has developed, but they are under control of dominators who understand the R complex. They understand that the R complex ruling the mind is really the simulation in nature, but that they can come in and they can take control over that because they know that nothing is really operating from the neocortex. So they can come in there and they can dominate the whole brain with fear because they know that the R complex reacts to fear. Okay? Now, just as a reminder, and I know I don't need to say this to the advanced class out there, but when listening to this type of information, it is very important, and this is something I've already stated before, is to make sure to think literally and think allegorically all at once, always, all through life. Think esoterically and think exoterically all at once, all the time. Try to get in the habit of thinking this way. You know, think morally and think immorally all at once. Because when we do this, this is what helps us develop a fuller, big picture understanding of reality. Okay? So, as the single human soul beginning this journey into the underworld, especially in correspondence to the zodiac, I look at this as the material light that rules the brain, which is beginning to fall. It's beginning to decay, okay? So thinking of the sun going through Virgo into Libra, okay? Going down into the autumn part of the zodiac, okay? The autumn season, okay? So I look at this as the time when someone is beginning to see the darkness in our world. Okay, so if you look at this whole zodiac as a life cycle, the top half is the material cycle of the being, and then going down from Virgo, passing through the autumn equinox into Libra, this is when someone is beginning to see the matrix, man's matrix control system. And we have to remember that the matrix is the matrix in nature, which is the mother womb of the universe, which is symbolically the whole zodiac when you really understand it. And then there's man playing God, which ends up generating a proxy matrix control system that they install into the human mind because they understand this dark side. They understand the science in this dark side. And by understanding the dark side that the materialists don't understand, then they can control those who are symbolically living in the upper half of the zodiac with deep, dark, fear-based emotional mind control methods and tactics. So going into this area of the zodiac symbolically, you can look at this as this is where many people tend to go in their early conspiracy theorist stages. This is where many people poke their heads under. So if you think about this top half as the matrix of materialism, and then think of poking your head underneath that line of the equator or the equinox, that's what I'm talking about. And so they're seeing into the dark side of reality. And they really have, in the beginning, they really don't know what they're really looking at. They don't know what they're seeing. But they know that they're seeing something is actually wrong. Whether they know what right and wrong are, they know that something does not seem right. So it's like, you know, peeking behind the curtain and then having to, you know, pop your head back up into the material world of materialists or normies. And this is where the conspiracy theorists try to tell those in the material world, in the material mindset, what's actually going on down below, even though they don't really know what's going on. They just know something is wrong. Okay. And they're quickly met with resistance. They're met with ridicule. They're met with mockery. They're met with dismissive behavior. And anybody who has ever tried to tell anybody about what's going on in our world, truly, this is, you know, that this is very true. Okay. You know, you have gnosis, you have experience of the pain of trying to tell people what's really going on in the dark side. So this is akin to the middle chamber in the second degree, because it's scary to go into the dark. It's scary to go into the place that you have never seen and you don't understand. And this is the place where people just don't understand what's going on, and then they quickly run away from this part of the being because they don't want to go into Amenta. They don't want to go into the underworld because they're not equipped. They don't know what's down there, and they don't want to know what's down there. But so this is what either makes the seeker either give up on searching what's down there and then go back to materialism, aka asleep, sleepwalking, okay, in the material light, being blind in the light, which is most of the time. Most people poke their head down in the dark and then they go back up and forget about it, move on, stay in the world of material light. Or every once in a while, someone like, I don't know, yours truly will keep pushing forward with more curiosity and more will to know what's actually down there. And curiosity for what's actually true in nature or what's true down there in the dark. And then realizing that there's so much of the world that is unknown, which is due to the veil of ignorance between the material and occult world. Okay, this is where the veil starts to come off when we go down into this world, because that veil has been not only put over our eyes since birth through indoctrination, but it's also because of our collective ignorance, our willful ignorance to resist the knowledge of what the underworld represents. So this is where the initiate begins their descent into the spirit occult world. This is where someone questions their whole reality. Okay, this is where the ego really begins to get recognized and worked on and worked with, if someone actually goes into the dark and actually starts to see what the ego is. Now, obviously, that can go both ways, okay? And I'm going to get into that, you know, because it can be where you recognize the ego is self-service, you know, control others, be conscious of that, and basically believe in social Darwinism And obviously it goes a lot further, but this is even symbolically the place of Scorpio, where one has hit their rock bottom. This is something else I got into symbolically about Osiris being murdered by Set and thrown in the water, the Nile River. Okay, so you have Scorpio in this low part of the zodiac. Okay, so think of the whole lower half as water. And then the lowest point in water is the bed rock. So the rock bottom, right? And this is where people symbolically do have their real rock bottom, because there's, you can't go any further down except for into real physical death. So if you've had your rock bottom, you can only go up from there, right? But think about bed rock. So a bed is a place to sleep, right? So it's a low place of self. And really, symbolically, in accordance with the sun, the winter solstice and the 3 days that follow are the lowest place in correspondence with the self at its lowest point. Okay, so the 21st, 22nd, 23rd, and 24th of December. So this is dealing with the eschatology. And if someone makes it through this lowest point spiritually, they tend to seek to realize the difference between right and wrong behavior. They start to understand what is really wrong in this world. And so they seek to understand. Naturally, people get to this point and they seek to understand what is really wrong truly in nature. What is a wrong behavior? What is a right behavior? Very few people make it to this point. But this is why coming into the second degree, when entering between the two pillars, the terrestrial pillar and the celestial pillar, this is symbolically where one must truly understand that as one suffers, all suffer. So as one is going through their suffering, all suffer. But also as someone else suffers, all suffer. Okay, so to understand suffering taking place in others is to realize the slave system that we're all part of. And that this dark, generative slave system is morally wrong, and something needs to be done about it. Action needs to be taken in oneself and then out into the world as a result. So there needs to be a correction in the self. This is where someone truly begins to understand their individual responsibility to truth. This is the beginning of the great work, by learning and understanding the science of natural law. And this is also about truly discovering care and its meaning. It's deep, deep meaning, because care is found in the deep, because you're going deep into the self. Deep means darkness. So going into the darkness, the heart of darkness, to find care, to actually make the change, the necessary changes in the world to do right, to end slavery in the self, which helps end slavery in the world. Now, thinking of the solar mythology and the eschatology dealing with the ritual of Osiris, we have to remember that Osiris is the spirit of the whole zodiac. Okay? He is at the center of material. He is the crux of the X in the square. Okay? Where the two lines meet in the X, that is Osiris. That is the fifth point. That is spirit. That is the quintessence. So the square, the divine square, this is what equals material. This is matter, which he symbolically holds all together, right? That's why the mythos, the mythology, and the eschatology are so important to understand together, because it's the spirit that holds all of them together, that holds all of this together, okay? That's Osiris. It's animism expressed and applied, something that we can see symbolically, okay? So the X within the square is animism, because animism is spirit within all things. Animism is spirit within matter and understanding that, okay? So Isis is the holy square, okay? This is what contains Osiris as spirit, and he holds it all together, okay? Or you can look at it as, simultaneously, it's Isis that contains the spirit, okay? Isis is the container of spirit. She is the sacred feminine that embodies spirit. So Isis is the holy mother. She's matter. She's mater. She's the womb. She's the earth. And the square and the cube are symbols for earth. And the square and cube are Isis. Think about it. She is the womb, which is darkness. That's what she represents. She holds it all together. She contains the spirit. So she represents the receiver of material light and the birther of spiritual light. So to understand this story further, we need to understand that Osiris symbolically is the spirit, which is hidden within the proxy veil of the material sun, because he represents the sun. But we have to understand that the sun represents material before Osiris's symbolic death, when he is the god of the living, the upper half of the zodiac. Okay, so his resurrection is when the sun represents spirit, when he becomes the god of the underworld or god of the dead. Okay, but the material-based Osiris as the sun, which goes down from the summer solstice into or under the autumn equinox within the zodiac, this is when the decay of life begins to take place in the northern hemisphere. This is when leaves fall, or they leave back to earth, down to the ground, to the soil. They leave the tree. Okay, because this whole tracing board really is the whole tree of life. So Osiris, as the sun, also represents the light of truth. And so when he descends into the underworld, his brother Typhon, aka Set, the darkness, he deceives his brother Osiris by inviting him to a gathering, which he then invites him into this box, a special made decorated chest, and he pushes him into the box with the help of his 72 comrades or conspirators or disciples, however you want to call that or however you want to look at that. It's important to know all three. But they help him close the lid, and then they help him chuck Osiris into the Nile River. And this was the murdering of Osiris, being the light, okay, the material light. So Typhon, and this is why we have to, you know, again, make sure that when we're listening to this information, listen to things morally and immorally. Listen, look at things, look at the dark as dark and light, and also look at the light as dark and light. Okay, so that way you can really start to see what these figures represent in nature, in consciousness. So Typhon, the darkness, equates to the evils and ignorance of beings who wish to destroy or hide or occult the truth, whether that be from others or from themselves. But he also represents the jealousy in man that wants to be the god of the living, because his brother is the god of the living, being Osiris. He's jealous of the god of the living, which is what we see in the world. We see this. We see people embodying this spirit in the world. So we know that there are certain sorcerers playing God in the land of the living, symbolically, the land of the material-minded living humans. So those who have the higher knowledge differential, who are drawing from the dark side in order to control the material minds. And they're not just drawing from the dark side, they're drawing from the light side too. They're using the whole material world to draw from, to gain their power. So they are master puppeteers. They're master mind dominators. They believe they're embodying the spirit of Osiris as the god of the living, whether they refer to it as Osiris or not, because that's what Typhon wants, and that's what Typhon does. Typhon wants what his brother has. He's jealous, which is he wants godly power over the living, where he can draw energy from them and have the complex of control. He wants to rule. You know, a really good movie that I recommend that shows this really well is Gods of Egypt. And a lot of people don't really know about that movie because I guess it didn't really do too well according to the critics. But if you watch it and you understand the myth, then it can be really revealing, because obviously there's some propaganda in it, but it really is a great movie, and it really does put things in perspective to help us understand the symbolism and the phases of dark and light and how they correspond to Osiris and Typhon, okay, and Horus. Okay, so it's really, really well done in my opinion, but definitely recommend watching that movie just so you can have a better understanding of what I'm explaining here. So now, something that I'd like to continue to add on to is the sister Nephthys. What she did with Osiris before he was murdered is she seduced him by acting like her sister, her twin sister, Isis. So she deceived Osiris and they ended up having a child. So it's important to think about the things that are happening in the mythology and the eschatology as happening simultaneously, okay? Because Osiris gets deceived by Isis's twin sister, Nephthys, who appeared to be Isis, and they conceived Anubis, the jackal, the dog-headed god of the underworld. And I think it's really important to understand this jackal, okay? Because the jackal is very important to dogma, because dogma is the black cube as a symbol. Okay, so dogma is the prime spiritual location for discovering truth, going right into the heart of darkness to find truth. To discover dogma is to become conscious of truth, to find clarity of what is either actually true or not actually true. And typically going through the dark and going into the occult, that's where we start to begin to find truth. And Anubis is an archetypal guide of the underworld who is the essence of revealing dogma in order to learn what the truth actually is, in order to be properly guided to pass into the afterlife. And that's an attribute that we need in order to understand this jackal in the eschatology, in the solar mythos. Okay? But I do want to be clear. Jackal goes much further beyond the solar and the lunar. It goes all the way back into the stellar cult, early stellar cult. And it's also part of the science of the Sphinx, okay? Because something I've talked about with the sacred spade or shovel, and think of the jackal or dog having a sense for BS, digging out the truth like a spade, like a shovel, going down into the dark, okay? And also, the head of the Sphinx is very peculiar, because even though it is a human face that looks like the sacrum bone of the human skeleton, you know, right by the sacrum and root chakra, this is about understanding that this needs to be flipped up or reversed. Okay, so think about dogma and God, right? Because to find the truth is about finding God, right? Because God is truth. And therefore, it's about understanding that finding dogma is about, you know, going in search for truth and discovering the dogma is about where we really discover truth. So that's one of the ways that we can look at dogma, you know, in the sense of the reverse of the spade, the reverse of the shovel, because it's the reverse of the sacrum bone of the skeleton being reversed and flipped upside down. Now, obviously, the Sphinx being does not seem proportional. And that means that the head may in fact have been a jackal head. Okay, so the jackal is associated with dogma, and so is the Sphinx itself. Okay, but it's also dealing with the underworld of the zodiac. Okay, so they're very interconnected. So when we really dig deeply, we will start to see the dogma. That's the beauty of Anubis, because Anubis is to help us to help us in the underworld, to guide us with light, to guide us towards more truth, to guide us to be able to pass through into raising our spirit and finding our care, to dig it out, to sniff it out, to have a sense. You know, think about the, when you think of the sense, you know, this is animism. It's tied to animism, the sense. You know, something I talked about with animism, where they knock off the noses of all these ancient statues, which they try to say is a racial thing. And maybe it does have something kind of to do with that. But really, it's about knocking our sense off. Symbolically, that is what it's about. And so Anubis is about using his sense to guide us through the underworld, symbolically, okay? To guide us through the bullshit into to find the truth, okay? Or to guide us to the bullshit so we can find the truth. Think about this. When you think of Anubis as he is black like the soil of the Nile, which he is also associated with. He is associated with representing the soil. He actually represents the soil. And his name, Anubis, actually means decay. So think about where he is associated in this zodiacal tracing board. He's in the autumn part of the season, which is decay. Okay? So this is all taking place in a time of decay. And again, decay spiritually is about decaying the material, because it's about starting to begin to become spiritual, to begin to start to see the spirit, to begin to start to see the dark side. Okay? The beauty of the dark side, because there is beauty of the dark side. And don't let anybody tell you otherwise. See, because people want to demonize the dark side because it is what props up the material. It's what keeps people in a material box. Because it is the destroyer of the sacred feminine. When you demonize the dark side completely, you are demonizing the sacred feminine of the universe. You're demonizing the great mother principle of the universe. So this Anubis is part of the black cube, which is part of the great mother principle, the sacred feminine. And he is also associated with being loyal and protecting the dead from chaos. So he's an armor in the dark that helps protect the seeker from the primal fear of chaos, to stay on track. And Anubis is the guide. So again, Anubis is the guide who helps someone find their care. Searching for dogma, which is all about being guided to find care. And in the eschatology, Anubis finds the moon. Anubis helps Isis find the moon, which is all about helping Isis find the light, being Osiris, being reflected in the moon. This is also about helping find care. So Anubis, as the jackal, is all about digging deeper, not only to help find care and find the truth, but it's also about the solar mythos, digging deeply into the science of the solar mythos, which helps us dig deeper into the lunar mythos, because the moon is associated or combined into the solar mythos, into the eschatology, but then it goes all the way back to the stellar being associated with the North and South poles. And that's something a lot more advanced that we're going to get into, okay? But the jackal represents the guide to help find the dogma in order to find the truth, okay? To find your care. Now, Nephthys, the mother of Anubis, actually abandons Anubis because she fears Typhon from finding out, because Nephthys is married to Set or Typhon. They're wedded. And this is another reason that Typhon and his 72 conspirators murdered Osiris because of jealousy. Typhon got upset, he got jealous, and he went into a rage, and that is one of the reasons that he murdered his brother. Okay, so that's, again, that's about understanding two stories that are taking place at the same time that merge together. Okay, so it's really, really important to understand it that way and understand what these things represent in the story and literally, okay, and spiritually, of course. And I think it's a good idea to mention here that the number 72 is really important at this point within this time period of the season of the Zodiac. And there's a few reasons, but the one correspondence that really caught my eye with this is that there's what's known as the sabbatical year, being known as the seventh year for crops and soil to rest. And what this means is there are 6 years that the crops are rotated and they're used for growing food. So 6 years on, and then the seventh year off. And this seventh year is for rest. It's for rejuvenation. And in ancient civilizations, the seventh year was to essentially give back to the creator or to nature, or to let nature rest. Okay, now, every year consists of 12 houses or 12 months, right? And if there are 6 years of 12 months, that is 72 months altogether, right? So 6 times 12 is 72. And because this area of the zodiac represents earth, it represents soil, I see this as preserving the science of agriculture into the 72 conspirators or comrades or disciples of Typhon. Because this is also about capturing the sun or the seed every year in order to sow. So it has to go through each house, all houses, to get to that point. So this is about sowing the seed, being Osiris the sun, which is related to Osiris the corn god, something I got into in previous shows. So also, there are 6 houses within the lower half of the zodiac. And I look at this as the 6 houses of soil, okay? So, and that relates to the 6 years. And this is also related to the idea or the science of the human body renewing its cells every 7 years. So it's all about the time before rest or the time before replenishment. Because the autumn houses of the zodiac, this represents plowing of the soil before the new year. And this is very common at this time of the year annually within agriculture, because plowing or tilling the land is about rotating the soil before winter. And they do this by burying the animal manure. So tilling the land is about burying the animal manure, the animal wastes, and also the weeds and certain residues that are found on the dirt, on the soil. And also tilling and plowing is what allows for the soil to aerate, you know, to get to breathe. And it also warms the soil as well. So it freshens the soil underneath it until the following year. So this whole zodiac also preserves very important science of fertility and culture, agriculture. That's very prime to understand because, as I've stated many times, this science held within the mythology and the eschatology helps preserve the knowledge of when to plant and when to harvest. It's about survival and being conscious and evolving. So this is why we also have abandonment issues with the sun. So that's why it's important to align with the sun and align to the dark and understand the predators and understand that if we don't understand this information, we do go into chaos. So now, here's something interesting to think about. When someone tells someone to go to hell or to burn in hell, what they're implying is what we really have to understand, which means most people who tell someone to go to hell means they want them to go rot somewhere very awful and live in torture for their behavior. And usually people associate hell below the ground, especially Christians with their, or Catholics with their belief in the devil. The red being with hooves and horns and a red tail. And it's interesting that, you know, when you actually go through this underworld process, you actually do become sensitized to what hell truly is. That's why true spirituality is painful and hellish. You know, having brutal awakenings and seeing the true colors of the people around you and basically coming to realize mostly everything that's been drilled into your brain from birth has just been bullshit. It's just been a whole lie. And that doesn't mean it is. It's just most of it is, especially the material mind control that we have been fed ever since we've been children. So yes, hell is very real, but not the way that, you know, the church teaches it with fire and brimstone in the literal sense. Symbolically, it is dark, and the fire would be the initiation of purification, you know, to get rid of the hellish material worldviews that are holding us back. You know, all the lies, all the media lies, all the institutionalized brainwashing, and all the things that people have faith in and believe in. This is all burned away. This is part of the initiation purification process that we go through in order to raise into better people. Well, we have the ability to do that, but most people don't go in that direction. But this word hell actually comes from the Proto-Germanic haljo, which, and I don't know if I'm saying that right, but H-A-L-J-O, haljo. And this means the underworld. Think about that. Because going through the underworld is hellish. It can be in a lot of parts. But also this word hell means to conceal or to cover or to save. Because to save yourself really is about going through hell. So hell is all about becoming conscious of one's own darkness and the darkness of the world in general to see what it really is. And that is both a beautiful thing and a horrifying thing. But it's all about facing truth and going through the evolution stages of life, of reality. And think about it. People are so afraid to go to hell who are religious and believe that as long as they have faith in their Messiah or Savior, then they'll never have to go there. You know, that's why so many cling so hard to their faith and their beliefs. It's because they know deep down that they don't want that responsibility. They don't want to truly look at themselves and face the true judgment of self. But every soul in nature is judged no matter what faith, no matter what belief system, because natural law works perfectly. That's reality. It's measurable. As a species, we would never need to learn moral lessons if natural law didn't exist. We would never need emotion. We would never need to suffer. We would never need to feel pain if it didn't exist. Because it's the thing that teaches us our lessons in life. So hell is how we come to really understand this and appreciate it. Hell is synonymous with Amenta, which means sacred land, the underworld, the place of the deep dive, diving deeply into hell to feel that fire and really understand what you're truly living in, what we're truly living in. And, you know, here's something else to think about. Because this whole lower half deals with burial rites and death and soil. It deals with the casket. It deals with the tomb. It deals with the sarcophagus. It deals with the mummy. If we overlay the 12-hour clock over this tracing board, we will see that 6 o'clock is at the bottom. Its position is right on the winter solstice. Okay, and that's no coincidence. And think about what we say when someone is dead. We say they're 6 feet under. This is the place of death, symbolically under the soil. But literally, people are buried 6 feet down. And also remember, I said that the number 6 is the only number that preserves the X symbol. So 6 is the gematria result of 2 plus 4 from the 24th letter of the alphabet, which is X. X is the 24th letter of the alphabet. So this marks death and beginning. It's the end and the beginning. So 24 marks a full day, beginning and the end cycle of a day. So understanding that that X is found at the six mark, at the winter solstice. Okay? So this is the beginning and the end. This is the Alpha and the Omega. So I'm going to go a lot further into this. Now, for the rest of the show and on into the whole next two shows, I'm going to go deeply into, I'm going to cover eschatology. And this is basically going to be an extremely deep point that needs to be made during this part of the ritual of Osiris, this point in the zodiac, during the symbolic death. Okay? So let's go to the slide that says eschatology. So eschatology, the word eschatology comes from the Greek eschatos. And eschatos means last, furthest, uttermost. And the suffix logi means study of. Okay? So it means the study of final things or last things. So it's dealing with the science behind the idea for end times. You can look at it like a spiritual threshold too. Okay? But just keep in your mind things like the end of the year or the end of the day or end of a time period or cycle or age or the end of a life. And if anybody who's listening has actually gone through the shows and also watched my Earthbrain 2 presentation, I talk about the capital letter E and what it represents. And eschatology is also what it represents, and the word end. So this is the tracing board, the first degree tracing board, the entered apprentice tracing board on its side, okay? And on its side, it represents the capital letter E. Okay, and there's a reason for that. It's no coincidence. That's how it is. Okay, so the E represents the pillars. It represents the masculine, the feminine pillar, and the wisdom pillar being the wedding pillar, okay, in the middle. That's what E represents. E is also the fifth letter in the alphabet. Okay, so this is all about spirit. That's what eschatology helps us understand, is spirit. And eschatology deals with the immortality of the soul, the migration of the soul, the rebirth, rejuvenation, resurrection of the soul, and the end of time, and any system of doctrines concerning last or final matters such as death and judgment, the afterlife, and so on. So it's really also about understanding that by studying final things, it's also about studying the new beginning. Both the new beginning and the final things help define each other. Okay, so this field of eschatology possesses an interdisciplinary essence, weaving together the threads of theology, which is the study of the nature of the Creator, and philosophy, meaning the study of truth and morality, the love of knowledge, and anthropology, which is dealing with the science of the human story, being culture and origins and their timeline through space and time. So weaving together these threads into a rich fabric of understanding, okay? So let's go to the next slide where you see eschatology with the sun on top of Horus's head and also the zodiac on the right, the blue zodiac. Okay. So over 100,000 years, the profound science of eschatology has been transmitted via symbols, archetypes, the zodiacal wheel, allegories, legends, and revered mythological figures such as Osiris and Horus. Its essence is enshrined in Uranography, which is the mapping of the stars, as well as the celestial bodies of planets, the moon, and the sun. However, its purity has since eroded amidst the interpretations found in various modern religious and historical texts. And as I get into the next show, we will really start to see this unfoldment of erosion in the science, in the text of religions. Okay, because we got to understand where things started to go awry, where things started to go wrong. Okay. Now we're going to go ahead and finish this show with this last slide of eschatology. Okay. With the little mountain with the light at the top and the feather on the right. So understanding history illuminates an enduring narrative of escalating crises, a foreboding or dreadful journey toward a potentially perilous end, which is a risky, dangerous end to things. Whether spurred by the discord of good and evil or the ominous rise of danger demanding redemption, these crises underscore humanity's struggle, especially their spiritual struggle. And true eschatology is not about pessimistic denial or blindly believing in progress. Instead, it embodies hope, which is a beacon of freedom amid oppression or salvation amidst the tumultuous seas of chaos and ignorance. So basically, it's about recognizing the condition of human slavery and doing the necessary shadow work with the hopes to egress out of it, to rise up out of the dark. Mostly without, you know, too much suffering involved. So it's about refusing to let ignorance dominate the self any longer. Now, that being said, we have a really big follow-up to this show coming up. So make sure to not miss it. Make sure to go back, study this information thoroughly, so that way you're more prepared for the next few shows, okay? And that being said, I'm really grateful for you guys tuning in and staying for the whole show. And if you're interested in more shows, presentations, or news, please go to cubbyhole.com. And also, if you have any questions regarding the topics for these shows, please email me at cubbyhole@mail.com, which is also where you can email me if you would like to be on the email list for upcoming Cubbyhole shows or news or new presentations, major events, or anything else regarding the Cubbyhole podcast, okay? All right, guys, I'm your host, Nate Kapp. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. Keep in mind to do no harm, defend truth, and keep transcending dogma.